5 days into a new reality, what are you needing right now? What do you need today from this community, from each other, from me? In the words of Reverend Peter Morales, the president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, the election is finally over. Most of us are shocked, even horrified by the results. We live in a nation whose deep divisions have been exposed. The wounds of this election will not heal soon. Many of us are emotionally exhausted and deeply offended by what we have experienced. Very late last Tuesday night, I said on Facebook that I'd have something to say on Sunday, but I didn't know what. I have found my voice. I know what I want to say today, but first, here's this. I'm grateful for our tradition's freedom of the pulpit that encourages ministers to speak the truth as they understand it. And now that the election is over, there can be no repercussions from the IRS concerning criticizing a candidate running for office. Now I'm free to name what's happened as the tragedy it is. The election as president of a man who openly and gleefully promotes misogyny, racism, xenophobia, violence, and hate, who comes across like the second grade bully on the playground, getting an audience by taunting the weak kids, grabbing the girls, knocking down the one on crutches, calling the black kid names, and laughing about it as the other boys egg him on. Now he'll be doing all that and more from the White House. But I hope you're asking yourselves, what about the Trump supporters among us? This is a church, not a wing of the Democratic Party. And you congregations all around the country, as we've held vigils on Wednesday night and services of mourning open to the public, sometimes hundreds of people, new people, have been showing up. And there has been pushback from some unhappy members who voted for Trump and who are celebrating. In some areas, UU churches have large numbers of Trump supporters. So to people who voted for Trump, I say this. The lamentations, the rage, the fear are not about partisan politics. It's not about losing an election. I hope you'll listen to the stories of these people with whom you're in relationship. We are in shock, and suddenly we're afraid for the future of our children and grandchildren. Trauma is not too strong a word, and I hope you will honor that. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. 5 days into a new reality, it's still time for grieving. And there's so much to grieve. Mourning for the dream of the first woman president, mourning of what will become, for what will become of the Obama legacy, mourning for the international reputation of our country, mourning for banishing safety and stability. There will come a time for healing to begin, a time to reach out to people who allowed this to happen, to listen to their stories, to try to understand, to begin to rebuild. But for so many of us, this is not yet that time. This is a time for grief. When I first read, just a few days ago, the comment of a Unitarian Universalist who had fled from the World Trade Center towers on 9/11 and who said, "This is worse," I had to pause. Almost all of us remember the terror and the horror of that day. As bad as this is, how could someone who'd been at ground zero say this is worse? And that person went on to say, at least that time, we weren't doing it to ourselves. This time it's our neighbors. After 5 days of listening and reading, 5 days of paying close attention to how people are feeling, it seems to me that this is the hardest part. This is the greatest loss, the loss of trust in the basic decency of our fellow citizens. And If Hillary Clinton had won the election, we could all have been in denial a little longer about what's going on with these deep divisions in our country. It would have still been a struggle. We wouldn't have had to worry about the Supreme Court or health care or rollbacks on climate regulations or a whole lot of things. But when grief and shock are over, it will be time to organize and resist. But Donald Trump is not the problem. Trump is the symbol. Trump is the enabler. Trump is the catalyst. But Trump is no surprise. There are people like him everywhere. I'll bet you know someone like Donald Trump on some level. Let me tell you about my Aunt Grace, my mother's oldest sister who lived in New Orleans. She was my favorite aunt, and she was wonderful to me. She lived a few blocks from the Tulane University campus, and when I was going to school there, Aunt Grace would loan me her car. And I'd take a load of my newfound freshman dorm friends down to the French Quarter and stay out as long as we wanted and take her car back whenever. She'd invite me over for dinner, and she'd fuss over me. I loved Aunt Grace, and she was kind and generous to everyone. A few times I'd heard her say the N-word, just in conversation. But I was just 18, and this was the first time I'd ever been in the South. And no one in the rest of my extended family ever talked that way. I didn't really keep track of my aunt in later years, and it was only after she died that I learned that she and my uncle had been leaders of a white supremacist group. Oh my God. Apparently, in the group, my uncle was called the Colonel. I don't know what any of that means or what they actually did, if anything, and I hope they never hurt anybody. And I think with people like that, we probably can't change them. Maybe we even love them, but we can just consider them a force of nature and hope that their actions are contained. And I think Trump is just another one of those people with lots of money and a big mouth. Not so scary. What's scary is what he's been able to unleash. The hate and nastiness and genuine lack of compassion for people who are seen as other. What's scary is that nearly half of our friends and neighbors and families and coworkers and citizens are celebrating that. As we're all watching anxiously to see what he's going to do next, who he's going to appoint, that matters. But no matter what he does, the fact is still that we all heard what he said for months, and it resonated with half the country. And nothing he does now is going to change that reality that we have to live with. I don't know about you, but in the past few days, every time I talk to a white person I don't know, I wonder, are you safe? Are you one of us or one of them? After 9/11, people could express their grief with complete strangers. That tragedy was unifying. Today, a lot of people seem to be speaking in codes or symbols with others as if they're afraid of the repercussions of making false assumptions. Reverend Dr. Serene Jones, who's president of the Union Theological Seminary in New York, spoke this week about, as I did last week, the fact that Americans don't have a national story that's honest, that's human, that acknowledges the evil parts and attempts to reckon with them. She says that as it relates to this election, one effect is that a lot of white Americans have the false belief that the story of their people has been always for the good, onward and upward, constant progress from the beginning, and now they're losing it because of diversity. And that also leaves out the story that masses of poor white working people have been exploited by our economic system since the beginning. These entitlements they think they're losing, they mostly never had. And we have been the principal perpetrators of threats to peace and justice, but have never owned up to it. As a friend shared with me yesterday, this quote from liberation theologian Paulo Freire, the former oppressors do not feel liberated. On the contrary, they genuinely consider themselves to be oppressed. And so even as we're in a time of mourning for what might have been, for our lost naivete, for the onset of a difficult and unknown future, there are a lot of not so well-meaning people telling us to quit whining, stop being sore losers, get over it. And there are also some well-meaning people saying, okay, we got to get up, back up now and mobilize and organize, jump back into work. And yes, we have to do that. For some of us, we have to do that right now. It's the best way to process our grief. But for many of us, it takes more time. Again, we are 5 days, 5 days into this new reality. And there is hope to be found, genuine hope, not certainty, but possibilities. But today, right now, let's affirm our responses to what's happened. The campaign season itself was relentlessly brutal. Let's give ourselves a time to pause, to reflect, to grieve, and to comfort each other. On Thursday, I was alone in my home office. I was working on my sermon and was wondering, what do people need now? Is it really too soon to say, let's reach out to the other side, let's start trying to understand, maybe start trying to heal? Maybe people are already feeling a need to get beyond just affirming their grief and their shock and their fear. And I decided I couldn't process this thought without caffeine and a bagel. And so I walked across the street to Starbucks, and as I stood in line, I caught the eye of a young black woman that I know only very slightly, a KU graduate. She's lived in KC the past few years, has a good job, she's engaged. We recognized each other, and she said, hi, how's it going? I said, oh, well, you know. And she looked at me almost timidly and said, can we just say it? And I said, yes, let's just say it. It sucks. It sucks so bad. I've been crying. I still can't believe it. And she wrapped around her arms around her shoulders, and she said, I'm just so scared. I could walk into the parking garage and someone could attack me and no one would know I was gone for a long time. And some of the people I work with voted for Trump and nobody understands. And people are telling me I don't have anything to be afraid of, but they don't know what it's like to be a person of color. And we ended up hugging and crying together in the middle of Starbucks. I told her if she ever needed anyone to talk to or if she needed help to call me. It's all I could do right then. But when I got back to my desk, I knew the answer to my earlier question. If we try to rush to healing right now, who gets thrown under the bus? How much privilege do you have to have? How much confidence that your own personal life will probably continue without much disruption to say, enough already, let's get on with our lives? A time for grief. A time for fear. What I haven't mentioned yet is rage, as in an appropriate response to that which is outrageous. And sometimes I think liberals are afraid of rage, of righteous anger. So we're exposed to story after story about the anger of white voters who feel they've lost out on the American dream, and they're willing to blame that on minorities and women and immigrants. And we hear about the anger of fundamentalist Christians that we've ruined the country by allowing LGBTQ people to have normal human rights. It's as if that anger were a justification for their hurting people. Now, from one of our UU churches in California comes a report that one of the children had been called the N-word at school for the first time ever last week, and another child reported a new game had started on the playground called a Trump Circle, only white boys allowed. There were reports from Texas about children in elementary school classes in hysterics for fears of what could happen to them or their families, and this is terror, not of some vague bomb thrower, but of one's own neighbors and coworkers. Right now, first, before there is this necessary reaching out to heal, I want people to know that this makes me angry. This is not the time to intellectually analyze the situation. This is not the time to be meekly empathetic. Don't think meek Jesus turning the other cheek. Don't think compassionate Jesus saying, "Forgive them, they know not what they do." There will come a time for that. I'm thinking outraged Jesus, charging into the temple with a whip, driving out the money changers, turning over the tables and the benches, and calling them a den of thieves. To change the world, we can't live in that place of rage for more than just a moment. But to change the world, we can't protect people from seeing that decent human beings find certain actions worthy of rage. It's true, though, there's work to be done. There's so very much work to be done. There will be the very difficult but spiritually essential step of listening to other people's stories and of telling ours in ways that might lead to some understanding that we're really all in this together. Can we listen and empathize, connect, and even love without affirming false equivalencies? As Reverend William Barber says, some issues are not liberal versus conservative. They are not Republican versus Democrat. They are right versus wrong. So this is also a time right now to begin building communities of resistance. Unitarian Universalists need to get out there and be visible, be sanctuaries where people can feel safe and affirmed. Where we have privilege, we need to use it to let people who now feel emboldened toward aggression know that this is not okay. If you hear a racist or sexist or homophobic comment, call it out as inappropriate. Attend to the victim's feelings. See what they need. Men, you need to get much better at being good allies, speaking up about sexist comments, whether there's a woman around or not. At the end of the service, there are safety pins. You know about the safety pins? They're back there for you to pick up on a little card. People are starting to wear big safety pins as a sign that I am a person where you can find safety. And I want to tell you that many people are understanding the safety pins as meaning, I will intervene, I will speak up for you. And if you don't feel safe to commit to that, please don't take a safety pin, because not everybody is in a position to be able to do that. But that will be a signal to people who need it. And you can do what you can to help build this community. And so many of you are, to be here to comfort others, to ask how they're doing, to welcome people that you haven't seen before, to share your art and your music and your words and your poetry with us, to listen to each other's stories. And finally, we want to share with you a litany of solidarity. So I'd ask Elizabeth and John to come forward. I invite you to join me in this litany. Many of us are afraid of the coming years because we ourselves or a loved one face oppression, which we feel will worsen. So I ask that if you are part of the privileged identity group, that you would respond to each call for solidarity with, "We pledge our support."
From those of us who are heterosexual or cisgender, we honor the LGBTQ community and commit ourselves to acts of solidarity.
We pledge our support.
For those of us who are white or Euro-American, we honor people of color, black, Latino or Latina, Asian, and indigenous, and we commit ourselves to acts of solidarity.
We pledge our support.
For those of us who have not been imprisoned, We honor those who have been incarcerated, and we commit ourselves to acts of solidarity.
We pledge our support.
From those of us who are not Muslim, we honor our Muslim neighbors, and we commit ourselves to acts of solidarity.
We pledge our support.
From those of us who are insulated from the effects of climate change, we honor those on the front lines, and we commit ourselves to acts of solidarity.
We pledge our support.
For those of us who are men, we honor women, trans people, and genderqueer people, and we commit ourselves to acts of solidarity.
We pledge our support.
From those of us from middle or upper income households, we honor those who struggle with poverty, and we commit ourselves to acts of solidarity.
We pledge our support.
From those of us who are neurotypical and of currently healthy body, we honor those who are differently abled, and we commit ourselves to acts of solidarity.
We pledge our support.
For those of us who have American citizenship, we honor those who are immigrants, and we commit ourselves to acts of solidarity.
We pledge our support.
From those of us who have reliable health care access, we honor those who don't, and we commit ourselves to acts of solidarity.
We pledge our support.
From those of us who have not been assaulted, we honor those who are survivors, and we commit ourselves to acts of solidarity.
We pledge our support.
And for all those who suffer from prejudice, poverty, violence, disaster, illness, and environmental degradation, who we have not named or perhaps do not know yet, we keep our hearts and minds open to solidarity in new ways to new people. We pledge our support. May it be ever so.